order, please. Order. The assembly, please come to order. Assembly, please come to order. Appreciate it. My name is, welcome to the Village 2009 Village-wide Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Holden. My name is Dave Brower-Rieke. I'm the newly self-appointed presiding bishop of the ELCA. I also serve the ELCA as a bishop in the Oregon Synod at my day job. So I guess that makes me the first dual-rostered bishop of the ELCA. That has some relevance, perhaps. What we're going to do today is I'm going to walk you through an assembly process relative to the ELCA report on rostering. So you're going to be doing tonight a part of what the ELCA will be doing August 17th through 23rd in Minneapolis at the 11th Assembly of the ELCA. So if you want to play, you have a set of cards. Makes you a voting member of the assembly. And if you've got questions throughout, I will step away from the podium here where I'm not being the bishop of the ELCH. If I'm the bishop of the ELCH, I expect your respect and quiet, and we'll proceed with business. All right? Good enough? Thank you for coming tonight. Any assembly of the ELCA, whether it be a synodical assembly, if you're not a Lutheran, I'm glad you're here. Lutherans are strange animals. We have a group of 65 synods throughout the continental United States, including Alaska, Hawaii, the Caribbean, and the Virgin Islands. We're broken up into 65 groups called synods. We meet every year in synod assemblies to be about the business of the church. We meet every other year as a national church body. About 1,000 people will be present in Minneapolis, I expect, this year, voting members from various synods, church-wide staff, visitors, folks like that. We call our people voting members of the assembly. We don't call them delegates or representatives, because the idea is not that people come from Oregon to represent Oregon. The idea is that Oregon lifts up mature elders of the church together with other mature elders from the church around the country to be about the business of the church. So they are voting members of the assembly. Assembly is always run by Robert's Rules of Order, which is a old way of conducting business among a group of people to keep them from killing each other and shedding blood. So you have rules, Robert's Rules of Orders. But one of the first things that takes place in any assembly is called the adoption of the proposed rules for the assembly. The proposed rules for the assemblies are specific rules or agreements that the assembly takes upon itself above and beyond Robert's Rules of Order for the working of an assembly. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Oh, incidentally, on Monday, we talked about the ELCA's proposed social statement, Human Sexuality, Gift of Trust. And if you were part of that, you know what that was about. Tonight's process is a specific focus on decisions before the assembly relative to the potential ordination, commissioning of rostered leaders in the ELCA. That would be pastors, deaconesses, diaconal ministers, or aims, what we call rosters, official leaders of the church, who are in lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships. Currently, they're not allowed to serve in those positions. Question before the church is, do we want to find a way to do that? So this is a very definite decision-making process. You with me? That's what you're in for? You want to see about birds? You need to be somewhere else. Okay. So here we are with the ELCH proposed rules for the assembly. These have been brought to us by the churchwide council of the ELCH, just as the ELCA has these rules proposed to them from the churchwide council of the ELCA. First rule. Proposed rule, rostered leaders of this church shall comprise no more than 40% of the voting membership of this assembly. It's not Robert's Rules of Order. That's the way the ELCA chooses to organize, all right? We see ourselves as a lay-led church, priesthood of all believers. We want clergy and leaders present, but we don't want them to dominate. So no more than 40% of the assembly can be comprised of rostered leaders. Due to a magnanimous Holden spirit, all guests and visitors to this assembly shall be granted the privilege of voice. So whether you are a voting member or not, a Lutheran or not, you get to speak. If you want to vote, you need cards. All right. Number three, in harmony with Deuteronomy 23:1, no one whose testicles are crushed or whose penis is cut off shall be admitted to the assembly of the Lord. That... That's not actually an ELCA rule, but it's biblical, you know, so I thought it's social statements and associated resolutions of the ELCA require a 2/3 majority vote for adoption. The proposed social statement, human sexuality, gift of trust, I think is the 13th of our, we've got 12 social statements, this will be the 13th, I think, proposed statement. All of those have been adopted by a two-thirds vote by the way a church does business. So that's a standing rule for us. Social statement and implementing resolutions, which are those that tell us how the church will use the social statement. All right. The report on rostering, which we're considering tonight, was brought forward by the ELCA Sexuality Task Force, but is not considered a part of the social statement or that process, so it stands separately. Okay? So we have one more rule here. All other resolutions coming before the assembly shall be adopted by a simple majority vote as outlined in Robert's Rules of Order. Now, if you read your pre-assembly materials carefully, as I'm sure you did, you will have noticed some memorials that came forward from synod assemblies to the churchwide assembly asking that the resolutions relative to the report on rostering require a two-thirds vote rather than a simple majority vote. Right? The church council has brought forward this set of proposed rules, which does not bias the vote on those resolutions. But as you see, some students have asked that we raise the bar on that. Right? So, I present these rules on behalf, proposed rules on behalf of the churchwide council of the ELCA. Is there a second?
Second.
Any speaking to the proposed rules?
Is this where we talk about the 50%, two-thirds?
Yes. Now, if you wish to speak to the proposed rules, you use your cards. You raise your card so I know you want to come. If you want to speak in favor of the rules or any resolution of the following, raise your green card. If you wish to speak against the rules, raise your red card. If you wish to make an amendment of some sort or ask a question of procedure, raise your white card. Yes, sir.
Would this be where
please identify yourself.
I'm Don Meyer.
From?
Olin.
Okay. That'll work. Please proceed, Mr. Meyer.
So is this where you that 50%, two-thirds would come up in the assembly?
In the assembly, memorials are considered later on. So the memorials passed on to the ELCA from Senate assemblies will never get vetted because that process comes after the decision will already be made.
Oh, I see.
So if somebody wishes to amend the proposed rules, now is the time to do it. So you know that some have asked for that. So if anybody here is inclined to, if they got crushed testicles and want to get that rule out, you can ask for that.
We should probably just do it, right?
I think we should.
So
anybody else with this guy want to talk? All right.
So we should
please identify yourself.
John from Holden.
Thank you.
Actually from Lake, my country. From Donkey Lake. I'm a donkey representative. So proposal that number five will be changed from simple majority to two-thirds what's the one?
All right, the motion has been made that we change Rule 5 to read that resolutions relative to the report on rostering require two-thirds vote majority for passage. Is there a second to that?
How do we argue with that?
First of all, we've got to get a second get on the floor.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we rewrite proposed Rule Number 5 to read that a two-thirds majority will be required for the report on rostering resolutions. It's been moved and seconded. Is there a discussion on that issue? Yes, ma'am.
You have to hold up a card to fight for the screen.
Which one am I?
Are you, I don't know.
I'm against,
all right.
Against what he's
right.
saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I want
please
to
identify yourself.
Sheila from Lodge 4.
Thank you.
I want to stay with the 4 the way it is. Keep 4 the way it is. I mean 5, excuse me, the way it is. The simple majority.
All right. Thank you. Other speaking to the proposed amendment.
This is where we would be persuasive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you may want to say why you want us to say or move.
Someone up above us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I see no reason to change the rules.
Please identify yourself.
I'm Tony.
If you go to the assembly, you have to do this.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. I'm Tony from Creator Movement.
Thank you.
I see no reason to change the rules specific to one issue. We've already got social statements requiring a two-thirds majority vote. It's very arbitrary to suddenly decide that we want a two-thirds majority vote on the rostering issue. So I oppose that. And I would urge other people to oppose it also.
All right. Any speaking for the resolution? Yes, ma'am.
I'm Gretchen from Chalet 11. I think that because this is such a serious and deep issue for the church, it's going to affect every congregation and every synod, that this is not just any old thing. This is a big thing, and we really should have the two-thirds majority to make sure that we've got that mandate before we do something so serious in terms of change.
Thank you. Further speaking to the proposed amendment. Yes, ma'am.
Jennifer from Lodge 1. I urge that we stay with the fifth rule as it's stated because of time, really prudent use of our time. The concerns that have been raised would result in every resolution coming forward, and every time there would have to be a count. That greatly slows and impedes the work and doesn't really allow us to honor the true spirit that we really should all be gathered here to embrace.
Thank you. Further speaking in favor of the resolution. All right. Seeing no speaking in favor of the resolution, I'm going to declare debate closed, since it's no longer debate, but just a one-sided pile-on of those who are against this. I would not say that in an assembly. However, it is the chair's purview to close debate if only one side is, say, three comments are made on one side, and also for the sake of time. All right, it's been moved that we close debate. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we close debate on the proposed amendment, on the amendment to the proposed rules of the ELCA. That's the amendment only. It takes a simple majority to pass the amendment. You understand what we're doing?
We're just voting on five.
We're going to vote on the change to five.
Yeah.
A green card indicates that you wish to change five as proposed to a two-thirds vote. A red card means that you wish to defeat the amendment or keep number five the way it is. You clear? So essentially, a green card means two-thirds vote, a red card means a simple majority vote. Are you ready to vote? Yes, question?
I have a question. Yeah, in the real Senate assembly,
yes.
does the count go in the record as well as it passed or failed by a simple majority?
Yes.
Okay.
For the ELCA, they've got push-button voting, so the actual numbers go on the screen. All right. Abstentions do not count as votes. So if you have 100 people in the assembly, and 10 people abstain, 46 people vote yes and 45 vote no. 46 is not 50% of the 100 people, but is 50% plus of the 90 who voted. So that would pass. So an abstention is a non-ballot. Why would you abstain? You'd abstain either because you just don't feel you know enough to participate, or sometimes it's a mild saying, I don't want to participate in this process because I don't like it. That's why people abstain. Yes.
So that means that, like, my argument wouldn't hold any water because there's no counting of ballots. It's all automatic and exempt.
I don't judge the flakiness of your arguments. I just point.
No, I'm just curious. It's all electronic.
It's all electronic.
That wouldn't be an issue. Yeah. We're not slow up.
Okay, we're ready to vote. All in favor of the amendment to change 5 to read 2/3, please indicate by raising your green cards. All opposed to the change, please indicate by raising your red cards. Okay, the proposed amendment passes.
Yes. I like your math.
Division of the House. Okay, call for the division of the House. Thank you very much. If the floor ever questions my count, someone can call for division of the House, in which case we go and count one by one by one by one, which is why I did that. With the push button in the ELCA, that can't really happen. You know, unless it's really close and somebody thinks the machines aren't working or something like that. However, I'm going to pretend that passed because I want you to see the next step. All right? The next step is, and Bishop Hansen will explain this ad nauseum through this process. What you did was amend the proposed rules, but you have not adopted the rules. You've amended the proposed rules, but you have not adopted these rules. So those of you who had a real passion for two-thirds, if you just think you won something, you didn't. You with me? Mm-hmm. We've adopted the proposed rules. To adopt the rules requires a two-thirds vote. You can amend it with a simple majority, but to adopt the rules requires a two-thirds vote. All right? So what happens if you don't adopt the rules? Because people don't like that, right? So in 2005, the assembly, which started early Saturday afternoon was up till 2 a.m. only on the rules of the assembly. Okay. So if you understand the report on rostering process and the advocacy groups, this is a huge issue right here, whether we do by simple majority or by proposed majority. Okay, so we have not changed the proposed rules. We're now voting on adoption of the proposed rules of the assembly. Are you with me?
Wait, what if there's another recommendation of change?
I don't want to go there because I want to move you through the rest of the process.
You're going to leave in number 3 then, huh?
We're going to leave in, absolutely. That's biblical. So, you cannot amend the Bible with the Lord. Okay, so all those in favor of adopting the proposed rules of the assembly requires a 2/3 vote. Please indicate by raising your green cards. All those opposed to adopting the proposed rules of the assembly, please raise your red cards. Division of the House at this point. It's very close, all right. No. Well, I
didn't get it.
I said we amended it so I could discuss that.
So I think you did a call for the vote again.
Yeah, I will. I said I did that poorly. That's a bad leadership. We have not amended this. So we have before us the proposed rules as originally presented.
Okay.
All right. Are we all clear? My apologies to the House. Are we all clear? We now have proposals.
Right as it's written right up there. That's
right. As we're voting, right as it's written right up here.
Thank you.
All in favor of adopting the proposed rules of the assembly, please indicate by raising your green card. All opposed, please raise your red card. All right. Motion carries. We are now properly organized, and we have some rules for the assembly. Gretchen, would you please check the minute? You're checking for rule number 3. Okay. All right. There's many things going on in the ELC assembly. We're voting on a full communion with the Methodist Church. We've got a social statement to adopt. We have this report on rostering. We've got some budget issues. We have a HIV/AIDS initiative. We're working on a new malaria initiative. We're working on lots of things. This is a one-issue assembly tonight. So I know you all read your pre-assembly materials carefully, but please receive this report from the ELCA Task Force on the Report of Rostry. It reads in part as follows. The Sexuality Task Force of the ELC recognizes that there is a, quote, lack of consensus in this church concerning the approval of Lutherans in lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships to serve as ordained ministers, deaconesses, diaconal ministers, and associates in ministry. These differences are deeply held and often conscience-bound positions by people of faith who love this church. We discussed that on Monday. Conscience-bound simply means that we're not messing around with people feeling really strongly on both sides of this issue. In order to gauge the church's will in this matter, 4 interconnected resolutions are presented to the assembly. They're to be considered in order, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the assembly is to move on to further resolutions only as prior resolutions are passed. So you only get to go to resolution 2 if you pass number 1. If you pass number 1 and you fail to pass number 2, we're done, right? That's the theory. It's not enforceable, but that's what the task force is suggesting. In this way, basic principles of agreement can be determined prior to addressing possible policy changes. All right? 4 resolutions. We should take them 1 at a time, and we only go forward if we pass them. So this is part of the report. This is what they look like. Resolution number 1 asks the assembly whether, in principle, this church is committed to finding ways to allow congregations and synods that choose to do so to recognize, support, and hold publicly accountable lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships. In a moment, you will be asked to vote on this. Nobody's telling you how it's going to work. We just want to know if, in principle, you want to allow certain congregations or synods that might choose to do so to offer some right of blessing to same-gender people who want to enter into. Okay? If you pass that, we'll go to Resolution 2, which asks the Assembly whether, in principle, this church is committed to finding a way for people in such publicly accountable, lifelong, monogamous, same-gender relationships to serve as rostered leaders in this church, right? If you're going to allow some people to have rights of blessing or marriage for same-gender relationships, whoever they are, right? Then do you want to allow people who feel called to ministry, who are in those relationships to be served in this church as a rostered leader, pastor, deaconess, diaconal ministry. Yes?
But this excludes those who would be in monogamous same-gender relationships but just haven't found the one yet? Because they haven't had that commitment blessing?
Correct. So, if you are heterosexual and you're in a relationship with somebody but you're not married, but you're clearly in a relationship, guess what? You don't serve in this church as a rostered leader.
What if you're
Why?
Single? What if you're not?
If you're single, you can serve. So here's all the permutations. If you're single, heterosexual, you can serve in this church. All else being equal.
Chaste.
Right?
Chaste. Yeah, you're expected to be celibate.
You're expected to be celibate. But we don't set up video cameras in your bedroom. You know, so this is a trust issue, right? And that's the expectation. If you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, and you're single, chaste, you can serve in this church right now. That's not an issue. If you're heterosexual and in a marriage, right, you may serve as a roster leader of this church. If you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, there is no option to be coupled and serve in this church at this time. So the resolutions are asking, if there was a way to publicly recognize same-gendered relationships within the church, right? If there were a way, and you said in resolution number one that you wanted to see that there was a way for that option, then would you like people who are in chaste, monogamous, publicly accountable, lifelong relationships as gay and lesbian people to serve as roster leaders of the church? That will be number two.
Not chaste.
Sorry, get my adjectives messed up.
Yeah. So when we were talking about relationships on Monday, we talked about if a heterosexual pastor who was not married wanted to date.
Right.
That was an option, but yet, you know, if it was someone in their church, there was all these nuances.
Right.
If a chaste, out homosexual was serving as a pastor, and that was okay because they were chaste, but right. they wanted to start dating, then they'd have to step down until they found the one that they wanted to be blessed with.
We don't assume in the ELCA that dating means you're sexually active. So we consider the possibility that you could be chaste and dating at the same time. I don't mean to be cute about that. But the assumption is that... the assumption is for both heterosexual and gay and lesbian people in this community that prior to marriage, you're chaste. If you're dating, Monday we talked about if a pastor wants to date, they should let me know, because there are some possible issues related to that that aren't HIV or venereal warts, but that's how people view you and what's going on and things like that. But this would make it the same, right? Parallel processes. Okay. If you say yes to number two, resolution number three asks the assembly whether in future implementation of what you just said you want to do in principle. If we're going to do one and two, you said you want to, in future implementation of those things, will you, the assembly, make decisions so that all in this church bear the burdens of the other and respect the bound consciences of all? This means that any solution that serves only the conscience-bound position of one or another part of the church will not be acceptable. Can we find a way to do this that respects diversity of opinion?
Is this implicitly just about this issue?
Yes. Just about the rostering issue of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered individuals. And if you say you're willing to do it that way, right, then we will go to resolution number four, which proposes how this church can actually move forward. Resolution number four, which I can hand out to you on a piece of paper, shows what committees have to do, what work, what documents have to be changed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the report on rostering, all right? You understand what we're about with that? You understand how the four resolutions go forward? You will as we get into the debate, right?
So
we can stop anywhere in that process. Yeah? Yes?
White card. Gretchen, July 11th. So three.
Yes.
Basically says that it's possible that you will have places where perhaps whole synods and congregations that are conscience bound to say no same-sex.
I should read number four. Number four says... Because that's exactly right. The task force recognizes that such respect will lead to a diversity of practice. However, the majority of the task force believes that the conscience-bound lack of consensus in our church will be respected most faithfully by approving some form of structured flexibility, which means we do it somewhere different and another way this way. Yes, sir?
Jeff Pierce, Tin Pan Mountain.
Yes.
So what we're saying then is if one congregation says we'll come up with a way to marry our gay and lesbian clergy,
uh-huh.
and they go across the valley, and the Up Valley Church says, no way, they're not married at that church.
Resolution number one says, not just clergy, but anybody, if we're going to allow for rights of blessing. So we go to the church and we have a right of blessing as a same-gendered couple.
Uh-huh.
Okay. We are now are faithfully married in our eyes, in the eyes of some community of faith. And if you were in the state of Oregon, you would be expected to go to the state and register as a married couple, because you have that option as well. I'm assuming the highest level of accountability is what the church will shoot for. Now, if I go into Idaho, which is less likely to recognize our relationship, we've still done what we can to do that. The issue now will be, will a church in Idaho call us? Probably not. But that's okay. They could have a bond counsel to not call us. Right? The question is, does the Bishop of Idaho have a right to say, I won't even consider you guys, because I have a bound conscience? I mean, it's going to decide, it's going to get who gets to have say at the screen. The bishop, the synod council, the congregations, the candidacy committees. All right, the discussion will happen in, if you understand the process, I'm going to get you in, if you understand how it works, we'll get into the actual voting. Is that okay? Yes.
I'm Maureen from Lodge 3. If I were Lutheran, which I am right now, I would vote yes on all four, but I can see where somebody might not vote on two, but would still want to vote for three and four,
yeah,
if they were really honoring the conscience-bound idea on both sides.
If we decide not to have any right of blessing for same-gender relationships, but yet you still want to call me, that's a different conversation, isn't it? As long as I don't tell you I'm in a relationship, that's okay? Because you're not going to publicly recognize it? We're doing okay, right? Okay.
Soft touching.
I hate it when my wife says that. Okay. One piece of information, then we're going to start to vote. Those of you who were with me Monday for the public statement, for the social statement debate, saw this graph or this map. Not all ELCA synods are the same. Oregon, I'm a whole state. Rocky Mountain has parts of four or five states. Can you see that, the outline? St. Paul is its own synod. The city of St. Paul is its own synod. I mean, there are as many Lutherans in St. Paul as there are in all of Oregon. So our 65 synods are unequal size-wise, right? But they're based on demographics. What this shows you is the green states of whatever color, green synods, the dark green, light green, and middle green, are all synods that brought forward a memorial to pass the social statement. Okay? 39 of the 65 ELCA synods passed memorials saying, we would like the Churchwide Assembly to pass the social statement of human sexuality gifts and trust.
So they weren't required to do that?
They are not required. Of their own accord, they said, we, the Oregon Synod, want to say to the Synod, Churchwide Assembly, pass this sucker. They did that of their own accord. They didn't have to. The truth is that advocacy groups within the church, Lutherans Concerned North America, which are for full inclusion of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pastors, and Word Alone or Lutheran Core, which do not believe that's faithful behavior, had template resolutions which sympathizers were encouraged to put into the Synod assemblies everywhere. Right? There's nothing wrong with that, but that's what they did. So many synods considered the same sort of resolutions. In my synod, we had both of them before us. Right? Okay. So, relative to the report on rostering, 32 of the 65 ELCA synods, that's 49%, have memorialized the Churchwide Assembly to support this process we're about to do, to support the report on rostering, and I think to try to bring it to its conclusion. That's 49% of their own accord have said to Churchwide, we want to do this. 13 synods, 20%, have asked the Churchwide Assembly not to do that. Right? So that will all be in your pre-assembly booklet, so you can look at those things. Any changes that might be them. 20 synods, 31%, didn't give any memorials to the church, so we don't know how they feel about those issues. It's not to be assumed that all the voting members from the 32 synods will vote for passage. Just means the synod as a whole wanted that to happen. Yes?
I just have a kind of a side question. How does all of this skirt the issue of employment law against discrimination?
The church and its processes of calling people into sacred office are not required to follow the same sorts of employment issues that the public sector is.
Does that bother you?
Does that bother me? No.
This is, I guess, a political question, but My guess is there are some people that have some idea of those 20 synods.
Sure. Well, let's be clear. While this is a church process, right? Church process. It is a highly political process,
yeah.
Right? And advocacy groups at both ends of this spectrum or other issues, right? They got their acts together. So they think they know what's going on and how to, I mean, I invented my spleen here. Both Lutheran Concern North America and Word Alone have their own parliamentarians on site during the assembly so they can consult with their advocates on the floor. So 10% of the assembly is full inclusion, 10% is against it, and 80% are just trying to serve Jesus for the assembly. Okay. All right. Are you ready to do some work?
Yeah. This follow-up, I think, the last question. From what you know,
yes.
Since none of us are taking those dissents in the New York Times, about the remaining 20 who didn't indicate, who didn't show their hand, what's your impression about where they are?
I really do not know. Okay. I really do not know. Inconclusive or tabled, Nebraska, Western North Dakota, I'd guess more conservative. But they didn't pass resolutions. Some of these had the resolutions to ask not to pass, and they didn't pass them. You know, so some of them just didn't consider it, like Alaska, which I would think would be full inclusion for the most part, right? Some of them,
conservative.
Well, there's Lutherans in Alaska, not just Alaska. I know. Well, that answers your question, right? People are going to tell you different. Okay, we need to move on or we won't get to go to Vespers. All right. Back in session. We tally to see who's here. We make sure that not more than 40% of you are clergy. We take score every day, right? Resolution number one proposed by the ELC Sexuality Task Force for the consideration of this assembly. Resolved that the ELC commit itself finding ways to allow congregations and synods that choose to do so to recognize, support, and hold publicly accountable lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships. Is there a second?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded that we consider resolution number one. Is there any discussion? Microphone number four.
Ray Sherman, Hotel. Do not be afraid. Read what it says. To allow congregations and synods to choose, not the church-wide assembly. Thank you.
Thank you. Further speaking to the resolution. Microphone number two.
Gretchen Shelley 11. It seems to me that this basically condones behavior choices that are not, well, that are basically biblically condemned. And I think that's a fairly inappropriate choice for any Christian church.
Thank you. Further speaking to the resolution?
Okay.
Microphone number four.
Jeff Pierce Lodge. Where am I this time? That's so last year.
Please address all conversations to the chair. There'll be no crosstalk in the assembly. Further speaking to the resolution? Are you ready to vote? Microphone number three.
Mary from the hotel. So would this mean that a congregation within a synod that says it's not okay could say it's okay here? How does that go since we're allowing congregations and synods? I mean,
I would interpret this resolution to say that congregations that choose to do so may offer rites of blessing. Synods that choose so may require their congregations to require rites of blessing. Or synods may do that. So I would interpret this to say either congregations or synods may choose to offer rites of blessing.
So a synod could say your congregation may feel conscience bound not to do this, but you're going to do it.
I misspoke. A synod could not do that. But I think a synod could say, we're a synod where we encourage congregations. I can't require congregations to act. I think we could say, Oregon's an RIC synod right now. So I say, you know, we encourage congregations to be reconciled in Christ and open to that. But congregations make their own. So really, it's only congregations who are going to decide this, I think.
As a procedural matter, have we voted on the social statement yet? Will this come before or after the social statement?
After.
I believe, I haven't seen the, I haven't looked at, I believe it will come after. However, the question was, will this come before or after the social statement? I believe it will come after. because the original request in 2001 of the task force was to create a social statement and to report on rostering. However, if the social statement is defeated, this is still on the agenda. So this will be on the agenda whether or not that passes, but it will come after.
But that discussion will still be the context of this discussion.
If you so choose, as an assembly. You may connect that any way you wish.
Does this affect any substantive change in how the church operates?
This resolution commits ourselves to wanting to do this. I do not believe this requires any substantive change in the church. We have nothing that forbids a congregation from doing this already. We have no official right of blessing. My guess, and this is just a guess, my guess is if the assembly passes this resolution, the ELC will create a right of blessing as an example of how this could be done, but not put it in the next hymnal, right? But have a resource for congregations who want to do this to be able to use, so that we have some consistency in practice. There's also right and wrong ways to bless, to marry people, right? I have a service in the book as a pastor because I'm supposed to do it this way within certain parameters. So I would guess there would be a change. All right, you ready to vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We're going to vote on resolution number one, that the ELC commit itself to finding a way to allow congregations and synods to choose to do so to support and hold publicly accountable lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships. We don't know what the way is yet, so this is a resolution about principle. All right? All in favor of resolution number one, please indicate by raising your green cards. All opposed, please raise your red cards. Must be holding. Resolution passes. All right. Significantly passes. You have now said, no matter what else happens in this process, it's my opinion, that you've now said we're going to work on this no matter what else we do or don't do. Okay?
So is this seen by as sort of a gauge? If other stuff fails,
all right,
this could be a gauge.
This would be one tangible step forward towards further inclusion of gay and lesbian people in the practice of the church, I would say. But it's not just a gauge. It's not just for fun. I think you just committed yourself to saying to the church-wide offices, okay, create a right that we can use, and we're going to say it's okay.
So if there's too much, well, if we approve this and nothing else afterward,
right,
it basically said is the process that we're going through is something we want to continue, and it's just we're not, there's too much diversity to pass anything, and we continue on the process, and maybe we'll come to more consensus later in the future.
That's what I would say, is we would know that there's a willingness to move forward in terms of gay and lesbian relationships with this church, but we're not willing to talk about our roster leaders yet. But for the sake of people in the pew, we want to do this. That's how I would interpret this. And that, in fact, we would take a tangible step forward then in creating a way to do this. All right, resolution number two. Resolved that the ELC commit itself to finding a way for people in such publicly accountable lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships that you just passed in number one to serve as rostered leaders of this church. I move that on behalf of the ELCA Sexuality Task Force. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there speaking to the motion?
Got a question.
Question?
On the lifelong...
Name, please.
Alan, Lodge 7.
Thank you, Alan.
R3 or whatever.
We're not checking on that.
Question about the lifelong. Does this mean that if a person ends up not being in a lifelong relationship, that changes? Does their position change?
My opinion on that would be that with heterosexual marriages, we consider our pastors and roster leaders in marriages to be in lifelong relationships. Sometimes they end in divorce. So the intent does not follow through. I would say with same-gender relationships, the rule would be the same. Yes, sir.
Such a thing as lifelong monogamous same gender relationships in the world.
Is there?
Yes, sure.
Yes, there are. There are. Sweden, I think, has a national right of marriage for same gender relationship people. Some states in the U.S. offer a civil union that's like marriage. So the structures, the legal processes to allow that, which allow marriage, are in place in some countries. Five states offer marriage. Now, that's a legal answer to your question, whether the structures, the legal, are in place.
Well, those that I know change partners every 6 months or a year. That's
all right, speaking Red card?
Yeah, that just, I mean, you know, we have a lesbian couple down the street from us that have been married, I think, as long as we have. And they have, you know, two, our kids grew up with their kids. So I mean, my experience is yes. There are monogamous lesbians.
Now, if we were having the debate, you would have asked that question. And I could have even let it be a rhetorical question that just floated there with no answer. Or if I had specific information or knew somebody had specific information, we could have answered your question the way I did. Your comment, if you spoke to him, would have been called out of order. But you could have stood up and said, I'm in favor of resolution number two because I know gay and lesbian couples who have been in marriages longer than I have, and I would like to see pastors who are in those lifelong committed relationships. Yes?
Carol from whatever, St. Paul. I'm going to switch. I'm from the St. Paul area. You commented earlier, if a person lives in a state that allows for same-gender marriage, do you think the ELCA would require them to choose that civil act along with the blessing of their relationship? We blend those two, unfortunately, in our church. The church's role is simply on the blessing side for heterosexual or same-gender relationships. So shouldn't we continue to keep those separate? And if a person happens to live in a state that allows for same-gender marriage, not require them to end up?
Now, since we're in discussion mode, I'll respond to that. Were this an assembly, you would have had to say that is an open question. The ELCA, Human Sexuality, Assembly, Gift and Trust, says marriage is both a religious process and a civil process. So we are very clear in that statement, as we have always been, that we want marriages to be both a religious ceremony and a civil ceremony. That's our definition of marriage. So and furthermore, the statement says we are not in favor of blessing adults who don't want to get married. I mean, I'm talking about seniors, heterosexual seniors, because there are legal protections which kick in place with marriage, which we think are appropriate. It is my assumption, only an assumption, that if we pass resolution number one, right, that I would ask my pastors to say, if there is available in Oregon a law, a civil law that allows for a blessing or a marriage, you should not do a religious ceremony without that piece. We want to meet the highest standard available for the protection of the couple, their family, and society. So I would advocate as a bishop of this church that we require the highest level available for same-gender couples as we do for heterosexual couples. Yes. Microphone number two.
Tony, Sons Creator. Because this has not been acted on previously, we know that there are synods or instances where there are GLBT people now rostered and in lifelong monogamous relationships.
Yes.
How would this, if it would or would not, affect them? Would it allow them?
What Tony has said is that it's her opinion. There's already diversity of practice in this church. That's possible in certain synods. There may be gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender people already in some form of committed lifelong relationship which are serving as Russian leaders of the church. I know that's true, right? That is contrary to the teachings and expectations of this church at this time. Right? In 2007, the churchwide assembly passed a resolution called Refrain and Restrain, Refrain and Restraint, which said to bishops, if you know of people who are in same-gender relationships, who are serving in your congregations, do not discipline them at this time to make a decision about this. All right? Let it ride for a while. Why? A pastor named Bradley Schmeling had been gone through a very long, painful discipline process prior to 2007. All right? It was painful for Bradley. It was painful for his bishop. It was painful for the discipline committee. It was painful for his congregation. It was painful for everybody. And it cost a lot of money. And it's not a good way to make this decision. Right? It's not a good way to make this decision. We said, let's just cool our jets till we get there and make a decision. And so we are in this kind of limbo land as the church right now. Right? 2009, refrain and restraint is supposed to go away in favor of whatever y'all pass. So I'm hoping as a bishop that you'll give me some direction.
And therein yes. comes my question is, if this is passed,
yes.
essentially this would, even though it says find a way, which right. is pretty ambiguous in my estimation, this would remove discipline, right? Essentially?
As a bishop, I would assume that the Conference of Bishops, if you pass number two at the Assembly, I assume the Conference of Bishops, that's me and my 64 partners, we'll get together and say, okay, what do we do until we have found our way? And I think we'll decide we're just going to continue to do what we're doing and not make any radical changes until we find the way. I think find a way is ambiguous in what the way is going to be, but it's very clear that we're going to find it.
Yeah.
We're going to create a way to do it. So I would say, Tony, I would say that if this passes, it makes those rostered leaders and same-gender relationships more secure in their calling than they are now.
And if it doesn't pass?
If it doesn't pass,
what happens to those people that are already serving?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Do I know what my clergy are doing? Not really. I mean, I'll be honest with you, okay? I'll be honest with you. I have a formal knowledge of the sexual behavior of my pastors, which is very little because I'd get in trouble with it much more. Right? I have heterosexual pastors. Do they actually have sex? I don't know. It could be. Right? If one of the pastors is pregnant, I'm pretty sure she had sex. But it could have been a virtual fetalization.
Yeah.
She could be single and have, you know, done that. If they've got a child, it could have been adopted. There's lots of things. So quite frankly, my choice as a bishop is not to stick my nose into where I'm not invited in people's lives, right? If I have somebody that I'm told is in a gay relationship, I go, well, that's interesting. Yeah. I know one bishop has said, if you don't have video footage, I don't want to hear from you. So, I mean, the question is, what do you really know about relationships and what's publicly accountable and what's that sort of thing? So it's tough. We don't want to be in that don't ask, don't tell place. But I am not, and I don't believe any bishop wants to start making a list and checking it twice. Right? We do discipline when there's a complaint against the pastor. Yes?
Are you telling me that you don't know that they have penis and uncrushed testicles?
Yes. What you don't know is the pastor's washing files, we have x-rays. Yeah, I don't know that, okay? Yeah. All right, you ready to vote on this?
Yes.
Okay. The resolution before the assembly is resolved that the ELC committed itself to finding a way for people who are in publicly accountable, monogamous, lifelong, same-gender relationships to serve as rostered leaders of this church. It takes a simple majority to pass, because that's what you decide in the rules of the assembly. All in favor of resolution number two, please raise your green card. All opposed, please raise your red card. Any who wish to abstain? Resolution number two is passed. Now, I told you before that if you pass number two, we get to go to number three, right? What if in the middle of the discussion somebody says, I move resolution number three out of order? We've got to follow the procedure. That's your power to do. So quite frankly, while we want this process to happen this way, we can't force it to happen this way. You know? So if number two had failed, somebody could say, I move resolution number three anyway. You know? So it's an ugly process potentially. So Bishop Hansen will be on his knees in a deep fervent prayer that you behave yourselves and work with each other in a friendly way. Right? Go to John's classes about violence in society. We'll decide how we want to behave. Okay, resolution number three. Resolved that in the implementation of resolution number one and number two, the ELC commits itself to bear one another's burdens, love the neighbor, and respect the bound consciences of all. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we consider resolution number three. Is there speaking to the resolution?
What is the burden?
The burdens. Bound conscience means the following. When we as Lutherans talk about bound conscience, what we mean is that somebody is so convicted in the cellular structure of their spiritual being, through scripture, through their prayer life, through the speaking of the Spirit in their life, that homosexuality is wrong, or full inclusion is essential to the nature of the church. You know, they are so deeply convinced that they are unable to flex anymore. Right? That's what bound conscience means. When we have that discussion in the church, the discussion is not, I got a bound conscience, deal with it. The discussion in the church is, if you have a bound conscience that's different than mine, what is my burden of responsibility to you? How do I deal with the person who feels differently in Christian love? That's what we want to say about bound conscience. And the example I gave Monday was Paul's discussion with the Corinthians about whether or not you eat meat sacrificed to idols. There's a question for Corinth given to Paul, right? All the meat in Corinth went through the idolatrous god factory, was blessed in, to foreign gods, right? So when you bought the meat, you were supporting an idolatrous institution, unlike the food system in the U.S. So the question was, some people said, I can't eat meat, it's just not right. We will not, and none of us should eat meat because it's supporting Artemis, right? And other people said, hey, you're a Christian, it doesn't matter what you do. Have at it. The world's your oyster. Bound conscience on either side, right? So the question becomes, do you have meat at potlucks? Right? They asked Paul. Paul said, he said, and these are not his words, but he said, "Is the question is, what do you do for the one who feels differently than you? And Paul said, if I go to your house and you don't believe in eating meat, I will not eat meat. Out of respect to you and the way you believe life should be run. If I go to your house and there's meat, no problem for me, I'll eat it. Right? And so I also used the example of being a pastor, which has happened to me, marrying a couple who's not in the church, going to the rehearsal dinner and having an open bar. Do I, with my clerical collar on, with people I don't know, drink beer or not? I generally chose not to, because I didn't know how those people would feel about a clergy person drinking. And I didn't want to cause undue offense before the wedding. That was my example of acting on a bound conscience. The burden is, how do I behave myself in a way that respects that opinion? Yes.
So last time racism came up, like we,
yes,
we assume if a congregation said to you, and don't bother sending us any African American candidates, you'd have a problem with that. Right. If they said, don't bother sending any women our way, don't bother sending any homosexuals, how do we distinguish between those, right, I can't deal with this, don't send them?
Number
is
one,
their conscience bound, or do they need to wake up and smoke?
If you were here Monday, I answered that question poorly. That question poorly. I apologize. I think if somebody came to me now and said, "We're not taking any nigger pastors or black pastors," I'll tell you politically correct, right? I would say, you know, you don't get to have a bound conscience on that issue. I mean, society has moved on, and that may be your opinion, but it's no longer part of our public conversation, and we've decided that, and we as a whole are at peace about that. So if that's how your church feels, I'm not going to send you a black pastor because you're not going to take them. But you don't get to have a bound conscience about that in any functional way. But maybe in the 20s or the 30s, that was an issue where the church might have said, we really feel differently about this issue. Or in the 1800s when there was slavery, the church might have said, we've got a bound conscience issue here. People are deeply committed and we don't know how to navigate our way forward. Now, I mean, the Civil War happened because people had bound conscience and we couldn't settle that in the courts. Right? The courts failed to help the community move forward around that issue, so we started shooting each other. That's what society wants to try to avoid in behaviors. Now, I think women in the clergy, ethnic minorities in the clergy is not an issue of bound conscience for us. Right? If a congregation said to me, we're going to get a slave for our congregation, I'm going to say no. Ain't happening, you know. But this issue, the church still feels there's enough of a conversation that we can do bound conscience. Is that responsive? No.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it will unfold over time, and at some point, it will not be an acceptable bound conscience issue.
That would be my hope.
Okay.
My hope. You know, I don't take women clergy to a couple of churches in my synod because it's just not going to happen. So why put the woman through it or the congregation through it? Although last time my assistant said, "Can I do that?" And I said, "If you want to waste time." She did take a woman pastor. They called her, so what do I know? So you need to be careful about that. But I, with very conservative small congregations in the eastern part of Oregon, I said, look, I'm not bringing you a partnered gay clergy. It's not going to happen because you're going to hang them in this town. They don't want to be here. You don't want them. Don't worry about it. You know. So there's some selection process that goes on. Certainly the congregation can do whatever they want. So if anybody gets to have a bound conscience on this issue, I think it's the congregation. Because they already do. You know? The question is, should I, as a bishop, get to have a bound conscience? where I say, I'm not taking women to anybody in this synod. No women clergy going out to my synod. No gay clergy going out to my synod. Personally, I don't think the bishop should have that power. I think the congregation should have that power. But that's more than you ask. Sorry.
But key to that is the bound conscience here only applies to the implementation of these resolutions. It's sort of like a time-bound thing. We're not
Correct.
Saying forever after. We're always going to respect bound consciences on these questions.
When we voted on full communion with the Episcopal Church, although we didn't use bound conscience language, there was a segment of the church that said, I do not believe pastors should have to have the nasty hands of bishops who have been in the historical episcopate on their heads. So we as a church created a route of option. So that if some pastor says, I really don't believe in the historical episcopate, and you, Bishop Dave, are in the historical episcopate, I don't want your slimy hands on me, I'm sorry, I'm showing my prejudice on that issue. If a pastor says, I want to be ordained in the way Lutherans used to do that before we had bishops, they can write a paper, it can be considered, we can consider their bound conscience and give them this route of an option to that. Okay, that is probably in the church forever, but it may not be used after 15 or 20 years. Yes?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to remind you of the time in our pressing other commitments.
Thank you. Thank you. Are you ready to vote on resolution number 3? You had no debate on resolution number 3. Resolution number 3 says that in the implementation of the two things that you just said you want to do, allow for some form of right of blessing for synods and congregations who choose to do so, and in that, having that option, allowing those who take that option, so feel a call to a relationship as a same-gendered person, vocation of marriage as a same-gendered person, but also feel called to a vocation of ministry in this church, right? As we put together the way to do that, we will do so in a way that allows this church to bear the burdens of each other, that it's going to be hard, but we're going to do it as a team, right? You understand? All in favor of resolution number 3, please indicate by raising your green cards. All those opposed, please indicate by raising your red cards. Any abstentions? Thank you. Now that's interesting, because there were no's on number 2. Mm-hmm. But what you just did, bless you, is saying, well, we decided we're going to do it. So if we're going to do it, we're going to do it in good order. I like that. I like that, right? That's very nice.
Will there be amendments in the form of the language of the resolution?
Undoubtedly. I mean, see, this is an open process, you know. If we had failed on that one, the hope is that we would not go to number 4. I'll bet you good money that if we pass number 1 and number 2 and fail on number 3, someone's going to raise number 4 anyway. Well, don't stop there. We said we want to do it. If you don't want to do it as a team, then we'll do it. However, let's go to number 4. Okay, number 4, here it is. It's only one sheet of paper. Resolution number 4 has the number of whereases associated with it. Whereases are not formally part of resolutions. Whereases are supporting statements and arguments for the resolves to follow. Chairs of assemblies can either choose to just blow off the whereases, or what Bishop Hansen will do is to say the following. Bishop Hansen will say, I would like this assembly to work on the resolves first, and after we perfect the resolves, is after we totally agree what we're going to vote on, then we'll look at the whereas and see if they still fit. All right? All right. 7:15. The hour's over. If you want to go, I won't have my feelings hurt, but if you want to stay till Vespers, we'll keep going. Resolution number 4. Resolve number 1. There's 7 of them. Resolve that the members of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America commit themselves to respect the bound consciences of those with whom they disagree regarding decisions on the call and rostering of individuals in publicly accountable, lifelong, monogamous, same-gender relationships in this church and with churches ecumenically and globally. What that says, by my reading, is what you said you want to do in principle number 3, we're now locking down in resolution number 4. All right? We're going to do it, and we're going to do it as a team. Not that I can make you do that, but that's our time. Resolve number 2. Resolve of this church, because of its commitments to respect the bound consciences of all, declares its intent to incorporate structured flexibility in decision-making into its policies and procedures so that synods, bishops, congregations, candidacy committees, and others involved in the candidacy process and in the process of extending calls will be free to act according to their convictions regarding both the approving or disapproving in candidacy and the extending or not extending of a call to rostered service of a person who is otherwise qualified and who is living or contemplates living in a publicly accountable, lifelong, monogamous, same-gender relationship. Question.
That seems to explicitly allow bishops to act on their own conscience.
Indeed it does. So, but that doesn't mean that's what you have to vote on. It's my personal opinion that I would like to see that resolved amended. I do not think personally that candidacy committees should be able to flat out say no to somebody who feels called to roster leadership because they're in the same gender relationship. But the way it's written, the candidacy committee of California could just say, if you come and say to me I'm interested in the ministry, and I'm going, oh, you're gay, forget it. I don't think it's appropriate, because you're speaking for the whole church. But as it's written, candidacy committees, synod councils, bishops, congregations all have that authority. I would expect that to be amended from the floor. But, okay?
In your opinion, should that be congregational?
In my opinion, it should be congregations. Now, understand, you've got very little control over me as a bishop. I got these stacks of people who want calls, right? I decide who goes forward and who doesn't have forward. Pastors are hyper aware of this fact, that they don't get to a congregation unless I take their name forward, or the congregation lifts their name up. So say Holden, say the Holden congregation says they want to call a gay pastor, right? And you say, you tell the bishop, we want person X to come. Should the bishop be able to say no to you? You know, right? I should be able to say no to you if that person's not on the roster of the ELCA. I should be able to say no to you if I just remove that person for viewing pornography in their office, right? You want to give me some discretion over this, right? But I don't think you want to give me discretion over that, over gendered relationship issues. But that's up to the church as a whole. I'd rather see congregations have that rule. Okay, resolve number three. Resolve that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America make provision in its policies to eliminate the prohibition of rostered service by members who are in publicly accountable, lifelong, monogamous, same-gender relationships. That means we've got some paperwork to do. Because right now, the answer is no. So we need to change those policies. Be it further resolved that the appropriate church-wide units are directed to develop, in consultation with the Conference of Bishops, and the church council is directed to approve appropriate guidelines for a process by which congregations and synods that choose to do so could hold people publicly accountable in their relationships who are in or contemplate being in lifelong monogamous same-gender relationships and who seek to be in the rosters of this church. That means you said you want some right of blessing or marriage, right? This says to the church council, to the conference of bishops of the church, create such a way to determine that. How will we know if a same-gender couple is in a lifelong committed monogamous relationship? What does that look like? What does that mean? Right? How do we know if a heterosexual is in a lifelong committed monogamous relationship? They have a marriage certificate.
So that's the structure behind the Fudge Bill.
That's the structure. Well, no. With heterosexual couples, I can tell if you're in compliance because you have a marriage certificate. Right. Now, you may be dealing around outside your marriage, I don't know that, but the theory is that's the check, right? How do we know that for a couple of the same gender? We want a certificate, a rite of blessing in a church, or a contract from the state or something like that. So find a way to give us a check off on that. So is that clear?
I have a question.
Yes.
And we just don't want to call it marriage. We just don't want to use that word.
Well, they haven't here. They're calling it lifelong monogamous same-gender relationship.
Is it just because that just makes it more contentious?
I would say yes. I would say the word marriage triggers something in lots of people. You know.
Right. Puts up all those flags, so let's not go there. Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you, right? I consider myself a fairly open person on this issue. There was a lesbian couple in my congregation in Eastern Oregon, not in my congregation, in the community. They were Lutheran, but they didn't come to church. They went to the state and got married when that was an option. They came back. I went to visit them. They were happy, right? One of the women says to me, the coolest thing about this is that I now know what to call my partner. I said, what's that? She goes, well, my wife. And I thought in my head, that so does not work for me. I mean, wife is complementary to husband in my mind. That's what the word means, okay? Uh-huh. Marriage triggers that sort of thing for people. So I think we're trying to avoid that word, you know, rightly or wrongly.
And some states don't allow it. So
it's not marriage. In some states it is marriage, in some states it's not marriage. So we've got a messy society to deal with. Resolved that the Committee of Appeals is directed to develop, in consultation with the Conference of Bishops, and the Church Council is directed to approve appropriate amendments to a document called Definition Guidelines for Discipline, and the Vocation Education Program Unit is directed to draft, in consultation with the Conference of Bishops, and the Church Council is directed to approve appropriate amendments to vision expectations, documents, and the candidacy manual to accompany the intent of this resolution. That is to say, those are the documents that say no. Right? So the Church Council or the Committee on Appeals, who's responsible for that part of life, is supposed to fix those documents. Conference of Bishops is supposed to sign off on them. Church Council is supposed to pass them. Right? So before was, if you want to allow marriage, find a way to do that. If you want to allow rostered people to be married in same-gender relationships, then fix those documents. Right? Okay? We're almost there. Resolved that additional policies be developed as necessary, so those whom this church holds responsible for making decisions about fitness for rostered ministry in general and for call to particular specific ELCA ministry may discern and have guidance in discerning the fitness for ministry of a member living in a publicly accountable lifelong monogamous same-gender relationship. That is to say, right, candidacy committees, right, what's the criteria? Is it, I would assume it's the same for a heterosexual person, but we need that spelled out because we don't have that documentation. And then finally, be it resolved that this church continue to trust its established processes and those to whom it is given responsibility to discern who should or should not be rostered or called to public ministry. Yay, trust your bishop. Right. Oh no, we don't get to vote. You understand that process? This one's a very technical resolution. I would anticipate if we get there's going to be amended all over the place around who gets to say yes, who gets to say no. Right? This is one way to do it. Well, I'm sorry we ran out of time. You wanted to say something.
Yeah. Oh, I have some flyers here. Reconciling Lutherans. Good Soil is the group that's advocating for these things. And you can sign on a website. Try to have a large petition of people that are in support. And the Lutheran Network for Inclusive Vision has newsletters about these things. And I have some of those copies as well.
So what that means is somebody during the debate at the Churchwide Assembly will stand and say, you know what? Reconciled Lutherans have got 4,378 signatures saying that they want this to happen in their church. And these are your brothers and sisters who are saying this, you know. Instead of going up and say, Word Alone has 4,375 signatures saying this is against the Bible, we shouldn't do this. But that's how you get your voice heard in the assembly.
One thing you can do.
Yeah.
What has this last one? Can I call for votes?
Over the last few months.
Has that been expanded over the past few months?
The resolved and whereas has that been?
Not that I know of, but things happen that I don't know about. Do you want to vote?
Yeah.
All right.
Call the question.
Question's been called. All in favor of closing debate? Raise your green card. All opposed to closing debate? Raise your red card. All right. Debate is closed. All those in favor of resolution number 4, please indicate by raising your green card. All opposed to resolution number 4, your red card. Abstain. Resolution number 4 passes. See? Now we gotta figure out how to make it happen.
Thank you.
Please leave your cards in the cardboard box where you got them. We'll take them back to the Oregon Synod. Thank you for your patience and your good naturedness.